I guess we could just go without... Oh, I'm hearing echo, though.
Yep, there's a button for that in there.
Okay.
No.
Hey, it's that 1960s sound. All righty.
What's going on? How come we got that? Why is it doing that? Okay, guys. Well, I'm underwater. This is the WGN Radio Theater. I don't know where the where our sound is, but that didn't play, and I'm underwater. Oh, there. That's much better. Thank you. You know what, Lisa? We're in our new studio. We're going to have a few bugs, and but we did not have the music play. I don't know where that's supposed to play. I think it's supposed to play right there. But, hey, you know what?
We're
it's
here.
Program 294 in the series. This is June 23rd. It's our very first show in the new studio at 303 East Wacker. We're starting to learn everything here. We're going to be good. We'll be able to
play
all the shows.
We're already good, Carl.
We'll be able to play all the shows.
Yeah.
Tonight, we're going to play The Adventures of Philip Marlowe, and then it's the Jack Benny program, and then FBI in Peace and War. That is our programming. It's all brought to you by Cat's Pride. So let's play our game.
Let's do it.
Cat's Pride, crack the quote.
The first movie is The Deer Hunter.
Deer Hunter, okay.
And that is from, I don't know, and the prize is a never measure. I love the never measure.
I know you do.
You can center, you can level, and you can hang all your wall decorations. Let's do it. We're going to go for caller number 8.
Number 8,
yep.
The number to call, 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. Call us now, play live on the air with us. We'll be right back.
It's time now for Crack the Quote, brought to you by Cat's Pride.
All right, so we're getting used to our new home here at 303, but we're, we've got a little Cat's Pride. The movie is The Deer Hunter, and we have Richard on the phone. Hey, Richard.
Hi, Lisa.
How are you?
I'm doing fine. Hello, Carl.
Hey, what's up, Richard?
Oh, I'm happy to be here.
We're so happy to have you. We're going to get right into this. We're trying to work out a few bugs, but we're so happy to get you going here in the show. The movie is The Deer Hunter, quote number 1. It's a one-shot thing we got going over here. Number 2, it's a one-shot deal to see what happens. Number 3, one shot is what it's all about.
Oh, boy. Those are
tough. I'd say number 3.
Number 3, one shot's what it's all about. You like that one, Carl?
What was the second one?
The second one is a one-shot deal to see what happens. And the first one was, it's a one-shot thing we got going over here.
I'm going to say 2.
You like 2? All right, let's hear it, Ashley.
The shot is what it's all about.
It was number 3. Richard knows what he's talking about.
Yes, he does.
Congratulations, Richard. We're so happy. You won a never measure. You can easily center, level, and hang your wall decorations fast. You eliminate the need to use a measuring tape or calculate fractions, because that is really difficult. I love it. I use it. I have it. It's veteran owned and made in the USA. You can get yours at nevermeasure.com. Thank you so much for calling in and starting off our show tonight.
Thank you.
Nice.
Way to go, Richard.
To
thanks, buddy. Appreciate you.
Nope.
All right. He is a big winner. And you know what, Lisa?
Well, Carl.
Our listeners are big winners, too.
I know.
Because we're on the air in our new studio. We have some classic radio shows for everybody. And we're going to start things off with The Adventures of Philip Marlowe, one of the best detective shows ever heard on radio. It was created by Raymond Chandler, and his first novel was The Big Sleep. But then he had 6 subsequent Chandler novels, and in the films, Marlowe was played by a variety of actors, including Dick Powell, Robert Montgomery, Humphrey Bogart, James Garner, and Robert Mitchum. The radio show premiered in 1947, starring Van Heflin, but then in 1948, Gerald Moore starred as Marlowe. He was really the best-known Philip Marlowe on radio. By 1949, this radio series had the largest audience in radio. You believe that? I mean, more than Jack Benny, more than The Shadow, more than Suspense.
Right in the heart of classic radio,
yep.
1949.
Norman MacDonald, the creator of Gunsmoke, was the producer-director, and the radio show lasted until 1951. Now, before we tune this in, I want to remind all of our listeners we have a text in line. It is 312-981-7200. Text us, 312-981-7200. We love getting your texts. But right now, it's time for The Sword of Cebu, starring Gerald Moore from March 28, 1950. Here's part 1 of The Adventures of Philip Marlowe.
Get this and get it straight. Crime is a sucker's road, and those who travel it wind up in the gutter of the prison or the grave. This time I started with a Romanian from left field, got misled in the Philippine jungles, chased a beautiful blonde clear to Venice, and wound up with a friend from Siam, all without ever leaving Los Angeles. It happened like this.
From the pen of Raymond Chandler, outstanding author of crime fiction, comes his most famous character in The Adventures of Philip Marlowe. Now, with Gerald Moore starred as Philip Marlowe, we bring you tonight's exciting story, The Sword of Cebu.
Tell me, where is the office of Philip Marlowe, the detective, maybe?
Yeah, sure, right around the corner here to your left.
Oh, thank you very much.
Uh-huh.
My friend, you know this Mr. Marlowe, eh?
Well, yes. Yeah, I think you could say I know him.
Tell me, he is a reliable man?
Well, that depends on what you want to rely on him for. Excuse me, will you? I want to unlock the door.
What? You are Philip Marlowe?
Yeah, you're so right. Come on in, Mr.
Never mind. Now listen to me. I will pay you twice what Henry Pound has offered to you. Also, I will add to that $1,000 for a bonus.
Wait a minute. What is this Henry Pound, $1,000?
Please, I have not the time for haggling. We may get $2,000, but you must work for me, not for Henry Pound. You only pretend to work for him.
Now look, Bud, in the first place, I haven't heard from Henry Pound since I worked for him 4 years ago.
Huh?
Second place, I still don't know who you are or what you want.
Huh?
Maybe you better sit down over there, start at the beginning and tell me.
You are lying! You are trying to trick me. Very well, Mr. Marlowe.
The short, dumpy man with wild black hair turned suddenly savage, swung a hard fistful of knuckles at my front teeth and piled me back up against my office desk. By the time I got out into the hall, he was gone. I was going to follow him, but my phone screaming for attention inside stopped me. I decided to be philosophical about it. After all, screwballs find me all the time. Hello, Marlowe speaking.
Phil, this is Henry Pound. Remember me?
Yes. I just had a reminder.
I've been trying to get hold of you for 2 hours, my boy. Where have you been?
Out to dinner. Now listen, Mr. Pound,
First, Marlowe, this is most important.
What?
I need your help again, immediately.
Yeah, it no doubt includes a stubby crumb with a head full of wild black hair and a nasty temper that left you on the run 10 seconds ago.
Kurt Bibesco.
Whatever you call him, it's probably it.
Bibesco, Kurt Bibesco. He's the one man I have reason to fear, Marlowe.
Yeah?
Come out here to my place at once, will you, my boy? Old Henry Pound's future is dangling over a very deep abyss by the merest thread, all because the sword is gone.
What sword? What sword are you talking about, Mr. Pound?
From the island of Cebu in the Philippines. The sword of Cebu.
What?
It means everything to me, and it's gone, vanished. I must have it back. Hurry, Marlowe.
Many minutes later, I pulled up in front of the walled-in jungle Henry Pound called home and zigzagged in through an Okinawan anti-evil spirit gate. Waded past the grove of dripping elephant ears and ragged banana trees and finally made the front door. The house itself, from turned-up eaves to thatched nipa lanai, must have been gathered piecemeal on Pacific Islands, all the way from Hokkaido to the New Hebrides. It was Henry Pound himself who answered the door.
Oh, Marlowe! You know, the only thing wrong with you is I never get to see you except when I'm in trouble.
That's the business I'm in.
Well, come in.
Sure. Hey, it's quite a place you have here, Mr. Pound.
The islands, my boy, yes. Since business keeps me away from them, I've brought their atmosphere here to me.
Even the music, huh?
All but the mosquitoes. Oh, shoo-shoo. Now, stay away from underfoot, will you? Come on, sketch.
Shoo-shoo, huh? That's an albino Siamese, isn't it?
Yeah, it's quite unusual.
Yeah.
But he sheds that abominable white fur of his like any common cat this time of year.
Yeah.
By the way, did you see my servant Hideki?
Was I supposed to?
Well, when I couldn't reach you by phone, I sent him down to your office to wait.
Well, he must have gotten lost, then.
Well, no matter. Let's get on to cases, my boy. Now, sit down, will you please? And listen closely.
All right.
My major business, as you remember, is importing pearls from the Orient.
Yeah, I remember.
And since you worked for me last, I acquired a partner, a fine fellow named Voss in Manila.
Mm-hmm.
With his contacts there and mine here in the States, we've been extremely successful.
Was he the one who sent you that sword you mentioned?
Yes, it arrived 2 days ago, but he sent over half the curios you see in this room. That's why I failed to realize that there was anything special about the Sword of Cebu.
Well, what is so special about it, Mr. Pond?
Here. Read this letter I got from him.
Hmm. Henry, I'm certain now there's going to be trouble from one Kurt Bibesco in particular.
The man you saw today?
Yeah, oh, I see. However, I've taken every precaution. Rest assured, Henry, that if anything ever happens to me, I shall somehow get the complete list of my contacts here into your hands. Sincerely, Eugene Voss. Well?
Eugene Voss was murdered 4 days ago in Manila. Murdered for that list of contacts.
You think the sword ties in some way?
Well, I'm positive of it.
Well, what's it look like?
Well, it's 3 feet long, Marlowe. The handle and the sheath are from the same gorgeous piece of white mahogany, and literally covered with intricate and exquisite carving.
Sounds wonderful.
Oh, it is. When the sword is in the sheath, the two pieces form a complete pattern.
Mm-hmm.
I thought of it at once, of course, but when I came in to examine it again, it was gone, stolen. Naturally, I called you instead of the police. I've got to get it back, Marlowe, intact and without publicity. Why, that sword is worth... what the... Hi, Dickie.
Hey, he's hurt.
Hi, Dickie.
Oh, Mr. Pong. Hi, Dickie, very sorry. He did not see Honorable Mr. Marlowe. Hi, Dickie was attacked outside the minute he left.
By a stocky guy with wild black hair?
Oh, yes, yes, that him, yes. He find out where Hi, Dickie was going, then he hit Hi, Dickie. Not all Hi, Dickie remember until few minutes ago when he waked up again.
Oh, well, do you need a doctor, Hi, Dickie?
Oh, no, no, thank you. Just the same, Mr. Pound. Hi, Dickie already feel much better.
Well, if you're sure, well, now you better go lie down anyway.
So, thank you. We wash head first. Gonna be ship-shaped no time.
Yeah.
Very sorry, Hi, Dickie was not school, Mr. Pong. Excuse, please. Very sorry.
Well, now, that explains how Bibesco got to your office, my boy. He's our man, all right.
Yeah, but I don't think Bibesco has the sword. You see, he's looking for it. He offered $2,000 to me to double-cross you.
Oh. I can't understand it. Bibesco is the only one who might know the truth about the sword. If he didn't take it, then who... Oh, shoo, you stupid cat, get out there. Look out! I knew it. Now see what you've done. Broken my siling vase.
Hey, it was playing with a piece of paper over there. Wait a minute. Oh, yeah, here it is.
Eh?
It's a rent receipt made out to somebody named Saunders.
Let me see it.
Sure.
Received $40 rent 1 month in advance for 812 Front Street, Venice. It is dated yesterday. Marlowe, I've never heard of this Saunders person, yet this thing was dropped here in my house. Perhaps by our thief, Marlowe. Do you realize what a break this is?
Dropped isn't the word. This was deposited.
Well, what do you mean?
It's a plant. It's a plant complete with name, address, and date. It was left here by someone who wanted it to be found, because whoever has the sword of Cebu right now might also have it up for sale.
I think you're right, my boy. Wait, what do you plan to do?
The only thing I can do, go to Venice and strike a bargain in our favor, I hope. I'll call you, Mr. Pound. I pushed my way out through the jungle of my car, turned around at the dead end of the street, and went down the way I'd come. At the first intersection, leaning against a lamppost, was 6 feet of lantern-jawed redhead in a turtleneck sweater and seaman's jacket. He gave me a hard, steady once over until I was out of sight. Later, halfway to Venice, I picked up a pair of very sticky headlights in my rearview mirror, but lost them again. I turned out of Front Street and finally found number 812 all by itself out at the far end. I parked a block away and walked back. It was a battered, rickety beach shack. I moved in gently and found a crack wide enough to look through. There was no furniture, just one big packing crate, a kerosene lamp, and a blonde. Oh, what a blonde. She belonged in that joint like an orchid in a blacksmith. In one hand, she held a cigarette, in the other, a small automatic. I went quietly to the back of the house, found a tin can, and threw it. And I plastered my back up beside the door and waited. She came out slowly, gun first. And when there was enough showing to get a hold of, I grabbed.
Let go.
My gun, sister. Come on, give. That's better. Now we can go in and talk, huh?
You think you're so clever.
Now goodbye. Hey, cozy little spot you picked.
You got here, so it serves its purpose. Who are you?
Philip Marlowe, Henry Pond's private detective. Where's the sword?
Oh, we've things to talk over.
Your bargaining position is lousy, Miss Saunders.
What's the offer?
Zero, baby. I'm getting it back for free. Now, where is it?
Get your hands off me. The sword is here in the house, but the scabbard isn't. And one's quite worthless without the other, you know.
You're not taking a lot of chances, are you, kid?
The sword has already brought me $5,000, Marlowe, and I've only just begun. So make an offer. And make it good.
You're a liar. The sword's not worth one-tenth that.
Not of itself, no. But this one's special, and I know why. And I'll tell you something else.
You bet you will. You'll tell me where it is and fast.
Not that fast, mister. Don't move. Drop the gun. Now you can turn around.
Well, a lantern jaw with red hair. So you were tailing me, after all.
Ah, you said it.
Now, wait a minute.
Shut up.
But I...
Get out. The front door. Go on, beat it. I'll see you later. Now you, mister.
Now what?
Now we sit down, a couple of smart guys, and find a good, sensible way to work this out. Only I'm just a little smarter, because I got the only gun.
Keep talking.
What'd you say the sword was? Speak up, fella. Time's running out.
Sounds like time's not the only thing that's running out, Red.
Somebody's in the back room. Sorry, Tootsie, but now this only works one way.
Oh. I couldn't tell how long I'd been out. But I felt like I'd lost at least a weekend in somebody's boiler factory. I got back far enough to realize that something was going through my pockets. It was snaggle tooth, had a week's growth of beard, and put the room in need of a healthy spraying of sweet air.
That's a little better. I thought you was done in there for a minute.
Yeah? Who are you? Oh, what happened anyway?
Yeah, that's what I'd like to know. Call me Sid.
Okay, yes. Sid.
Yeah, thank you. I was walking along the beach out there like I always do, and all of a sudden I heard a scream. You know, like it was a wounded cat.
Uh-huh.
It came from in here. And I know this house has been empty for years. Was it you who screamed?
No, I went out too fast.
Yeah. Well, I come a-running, and just when I stepped up in the porch, a fella in a pea jacket come charging out and beat it down the street.
Yeah, I remember. Red and the noise in the back. Have you been in there, that back room?
Me?
Yeah.
No, I just looked this far and I found you. What's it all about, mister? What's back in there?
Hey, bring that kerosene lantern, will you?
Yeah, sure. Here, I got it. Look, a guy.
Yeah, a wild-haired Romanian named Bibescu, with a sword of Cebu sticking clear through him. Dead center.
That could really smart, you know, when it's sticking right in there, dead center like that.
That could really smart?
It could really smart. That's the first portion of The Adventures of Philip Marlowe with The Sword of Cebu, starring Gerald Moore. More after these words.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Carl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
All right, welcome back. I'm Carl Amari, Lisa Wolf to my right. We're in the new studio, and I got to tell you, it's spectacular, Lisa.
It sure is. We're just getting used to our new space
and
I can get lost on this floor.
Wow. We'll talk more about it after we play the conclusion to Philip Marlowe, because it's a long segment. But this place is just incredible.
It sure is.
Incredible. All right, let's get back now to The Sword of Cebu on The Adventures of Philip Marlowe.
With our star, Gerald Moore, we continue with the second act of Philip Marlowe and tonight's story, The Sword of Cebu.
Beachcomber gaped like a marionette with broken jaw strings at the impaled body of Kurt Bibescu slumped at our feet. I quickly covered the room and the back porch was led to the beach outside, looking for the wooden sheath that belonged to the Sword of Cebu, just in case Claire Saunders had been bluffing. But 5 minutes of that got me nothing more than a little exercise and a lot of salt air.
Well, what should we ought to do now, mister? Call the cops?
Yeah, I guess so.
Sure would like to take that sword.
So would I, Junior. But the homicide boys are kind of narrow-minded. You see, they like their corpses as is.
Yeah?
Come on, let's get to the phone.
Yeah, okay. Nearest one's a couple of blocks away. You got a car?
Yeah, it's out front. Got a light?
Yeah, here's some matches.
Thanks. Hey, wait a minute.
Huh?
What do you do at the Conga Club?
Me?
Yeah.
Oh, them matches ain't mine. Just picked them up off in that barrel.
Come on. Conga Club, huh? You know where it is?
Sure, it's right here in Venice. Ex-Marine runs it. Kind of wild, though. Cops raided it once. They had some dancing.
Where is it? Come on, it could be important.
Straight down Front Street, Broadway, then left one block, and you're there.
Now look. You call the cops and get back here and wait till they come. Tell them my name is Philip Marlowe. I'm a private detective.
No. No, sir, not me. I ain't waiting here alone.
$10?
That's all?
You heard me here. Tell the law I'll get in touch as soon as I can. Also, Sid, I'll match that 10 the next time we meet if you've kept your mind on your work.
Yeah. Okay. Well, where'll I tell him he went to? The Conga?
You catch on fast. The Conga, Junior.
Will it be, Max?
Yeah, scotch and a little information. A girl named Claire Saunders, dressed in a white linen...
I never heard of her, Max.
Oh.
I see so many people, you know.
Yeah, sure.
Now, you get what I mean, don't you, Max?
Oh, of course, yeah. Well, you better make that a double scotch. I'm through. He should have known better. Trusting a fast dame with every cent of his war bonus, a jerk.
Wait a minute. Huh? War bonus?
Yeah.
Who should have known better?
Well, I...
Hey, Sarge, I'm running out of ammunition.
Yeah, I'll be with you in a minute, Kelly. Wait a minute. Look, who should have known better?
My kid brother back in New York. He's a vet. Marines. Yeah. He got his check from the state, and he turned it over to this Claire Saunders. They were going to get married. That's what she said. And that was the last he saw of her. Oh, well, it happens every day. He'll know better the next time.
Wait a minute. I just happen to remember. I know the girl.
You do?
Yeah. Been around a couple of days now. It's pretty flush, all right.
Know where she's staying?
Yeah, sure I do. A ritzy motel about four blocks from here, the Pavilion.
Pavilion, huh?
Yeah. She got bungalow 10 there, Mac. I know because she was complaining about it being the N1 and too long a run for the bellhop and a cracked ice detail.
Yeah.
You go get her, Mac. And when you do, tell the kid brother that another ex-Marine tipped you off.
Yeah, you bet I will. Bellhop, ice.
Oh, there must be some mistake.
And you made it. Here, we're going to straighten it out right now.
Get your filthy hands.
Quiet down, Duchess. Now, sit down over there. Don't as much as bat a false eyelash.
While you do what?
Take inventory, baby. I know you're alone because I played Peeping Tom before I played bellhop. Chambermaids do a much-needed job on bedspreads.
All right. So it's under the pillow. So you've got the sheet. Now, what are you going to do with it, and without the sword?
Are you kidding, Duchess? You don't think I missed that back room at the cottage, do you?
You found the sword there?
And Kurt Bobesco, who's wearing the sword the hard way, through his insides.
Somebody was killed with a sword.
Oh, come on. It's a little late for that wide-eyed pitch, baby. It doesn't your carrot-top partner tell you every time he kills?
Marlo, you got everything wrong.
Oh, sure I am, yeah, sure. But just for laughs, let's pass it and you along to the cops, huh?
Oh, no, please don't. I'll tell you everything, Marlo. Turner isn't my partner. He hardly knows me.
That's better. Now, just who's Turner?
The man with the red hair.
Uh-huh.
Oh, Marlo, believe me, I can explain everything.
Okay, let's try it. Did you steal a sword from my client, Henry Pound, yes or no?
Yes.
Why?
Marlo, let me start at the beginning. A week ago in Manila, please.
All right, let's have it.
It was late in the afternoon, and I was shopping for a handbag, just looking in store windows, when suddenly I noticed a man hurrying down the opposite side of the street.
A man who turned out to be Eugene Voss, Henry Pound's partner, maybe?
That's right. I could tell he was afraid of something, Marlo. He darted into a curio shop nearby. A minute later, I saw Turner.
You know him?
Just slightly. We'd met once. Obviously, he was following Voss, but he didn't go into the curio shop. Instead, he hid close by. And then when Voss came out, he shot him, Marlo.
Just like that, huh?
He was gone before anyone knew what had happened. I ran over to Voss to see if there was anything I could do to help. But there wasn't. He was dying. Oh, it was frightful. Please, Marlo, I'd like a drink. There on the desk.
When you're through, go on. What happened next?
He told me to take the money in his billfold, $5,000, to take it all for delivering a message.
About the sword?
Yes. I was to get in touch with Henry Pound here in Los Angeles. and tell him that the sword which Voss had just purchased in the curio shop was on its way. He should pay special attention to it. And then he died.
Well, you decided that 5,000 bucks was an awful lot for playing messenger boy, huh?
Yes.
So you said nothing to the police, grabbed the first plane for L.A., got the Pound's place here, and swiped the sword, right?
I figured if delivering the message was worth $5,000, the sword itself wouldn't be worth a lot more.
But you had no idea why.
Oh, no, maybe a code in the pattern of the design and the jewels in the handle. Probably not the sword itself.
Yeah, you figured right, little schemer. Here, here's your drink.
Thank you. The rest of the story
I can fit together myself. You knew you had something, but you didn't know what. So you swiped the sword, you left an obvious clue to an empty cottage, that rent receipt, you counted on it to start the ball rolling, and it certainly did. Who would that be?
I don't know.
Find out.
Who is it?
Turner, I want to talk to you.
Just a minute.
You still sure you're not partners with me?
I told you the truth, Marlowe.
All right, answer it. I'll wait here in the closet with the door open wide enough for the barrel of a .38, just in case you've never been to Manila. Go on.
All right. Mommy!
Open up, hurry! Close it quick, that peeper may be around.
Who?
The one I slugged over at the cottage. He wasn't there when I went back, just some bum I scared away.
Went back?
Yeah, I went back. After you ran, there was some excitement, sweets. First, I slugged the people because I heard some noise in the back. I thought it was you.
Me? I never returned to the cottage.
I know it. It was a louse named Babesco. I got him all right. With the very sword he was after. The little number right here in my hand. He was competition. So were you, sweets, except that I doped your angle a long time ago.
What do you mean?
Well, Voss told you something before he died in Manila. I stopped after I ran, Doll. I even came back. I saw you go for his billfold. I'll mumble something. When I ran into you again here in L.A., I knew you were swinging in the dark. It was a nice try, sweets. But you missed. Now give me the sheath. These two belong together. Come on, hand it over. You don't want me to be rough, do you, doll?
No. Here. Here it is.
Well, that's better. Like I said, they belong together. That's funny. They should fit it.
What are you laughing at?
The answer, sweet. It's a slip of paper with a list of people on it. I think it's crumpled in the bottom of the sheath here, and that's why the sword won't go all the way home. Yeah, here it is.
A piece of paper.
A valuable piece of paper.
Sure, names and numbers of all the players.
Marlowe, he's dead, isn't he?
Yeah. It's about as dead as a guy named Eugene Voss was last week on a sidewalk in Manila. Or the party called Bibesco.
What is it?
Turner's dead, but I don't think his partner is.
Marlowe, you thought I was his partner.
Hmm? Oh, yes, and I thought wrong, Claire. Well, now I got a little more to go on. I'll see you, honey.
Oh, no, wait. What am I supposed to do? Call the police and explain it all away as a practical joke? Marlowe, have a heart. Where are you going?
Back to my client, little dreamer. I think he can give me a line on that partner. Be good. An hour plus driving slowly back to the transplanted world on Crestline Drive, and all the way I kept adding and subtracting all the screwball figures I'd run into, hoping that someplace I'd find a mistake. But when I was there through the junior jungle and standing at the front door, I knew that my hunch was right.
Marlowe, you've got the sword?
Sword and sheath alike, Mr. Pound, are in my car. Also, I got news. Bibesco's dead.
I'm not sorry.
So is Turner.
I don't know any Turner, but why haven't you brought the sword and sheath in with you?
Because they don't count, Mr. Pound. There wasn't any code in the pattern on either one. The answer was a slip of paper jammed down in the sheath. Here, is that what we're after?
Let me see. Yes, Marlowe, this is it. Oh, I knew he wouldn't fail me. I knew Voss was loyal. I knew it.
Oh, better than that, Mr. Pound. You counted on it. And don't move a finger, Happy. It's a great night for killing. Now go on, into the study. We're going to use the phone.
Marlowe, you're insane.
Sure I am. So much so that I let the hairs from an affectionate Siamese cat change my mind. About everything. Keep moving.
The cat? What do you mean?
I mean the Turner who shot Eugene Voss in Manila, who murdered Bibesco out at the beach, who I just killed before he could kill me, had white hairs from a molting white Siamese cat all over his suit. What? The same kind of white hairs I got on mine when Shushu rubbed against me. Now, go on, open that door. In other words, Pound, Turner was a friend here, not foe. And from there on in, it all figures. Or do you still think I'm insane?
Yes, I... No, Marlo, you're right.
You bet I'm right.
Turner was in this with me. A partner, you might say. You see, I knew that Eugene Voss was worried about competitors.
Like Bibesco, go on.
Well, I knew that Voss would see I got his clients' list, the pearl dealers, if his life was really in danger.
That gave you a brilliant idea. Put his life in danger. So you sent Turner to Manila to kill Voss once the list was on its way. Oh, how neat. But tell me, clean cut, why didn't you let Turner know about the sword at once?
Because he was tricked. Voss planted a fake list at his hotel, hoping that Turner would find it and go his merry way, which Turner did. He didn't know it was fake until he arrived here this morning.
Which, of course, didn't affect the scheduled murder. Nice and thorough, aren't you? Or have you left out some little detail I should know, like why you bothered having Turner get mixed up in this at all tonight? I would have brought the sword and sheath back for you without him.
I know you would, Marlowe. That's why I hired you. But I also knew that there was a good chance that in finding the sword, you would also find that I deal in opium, not pearls.
In opium? Oh, fine. And Turner was right behind me all the way, ready to kill me if I found that out from say, Bibesco, huh?
Precisely. Yeah. Turner was right behind you, Marlowe, even as Heidecky is right behind you now. Why'd in you... the dark. You fool. Why do you think I kept talking here, kept confessing? Speak up, Heidecky. Heidecky, talk!
He can't, Mr. Pound.
What?
Heidecky is very unconscious.
He's what?
I hit him with a vase, a Philippine
no,
island
no.
vase.
No, you're lying! Heidecky!
Pound, hold it, Pound!
Marlo, you got him. Marlo!
What's the matter?
Behind the curtain.
There's nothing there, honey. Huh? Nothing more than a friendly cat named Shushu. Oh. It took a long time. It always does. But finally, the police in Los Angeles and the police in Manila knew exactly who had done what to whom and why. All of which left Henry Pound, the vicious little character who wouldn't even recognize honor among thieves, with a short, unpleasant future. And I thought about him and every rotten thing he'd done as I walked through his imported island jungle to my car. I thought about him and Bibesco, about Turner, the houseboy, about Eugene Voss, and... I didn't think about Claire Saunders until I got to my car. Was in behind the wheel, headlights on. The words were written in lipstick the length and breadth of my windshield.
Phil, dear, I stepped out when nobody was looking. But don't fret. Because from here on out, I'm going to be very good. I've learned my lesson. P.S. My plane doesn't leave until morning. Would you like to help me
wait for it at the airport cafe. They have good food and they're open all night. Claire. Airport cafe. It's an hour's drive. Unless I hurry.
The Adventures of Philip Marlowe, bringing you Raymond Chandler's most famous character, star Gerald Moore, are produced and directed by Norman McDonald and are written for radio by Robert Mitchell and Gene Levitt. Gerald Moore can currently be seen starring in Republic's The Blonde Bandit. Featured in our cast were Gene Bates, Junius Matthews, Barney Phillips, Byron Kane, Paul Frees, and Anthony Barrett. The special music is composed and conducted by Richard Arant. Be sure and be with us again next week when Philip Marlowe says...
This time an old Spanish woman who cared, a redhead and a mink who didn't, and a green suede button beside a corpse, all led me to a wounded man with a gun in his hand, cornered on a warehouse roof.
stay tuned for Pursuit, which follows immediately on most of these same CBS stations. This is Roy Rowan speaking. This is CBS, where Burns and Allen are heard every Wednesday night, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
That is The Adventures of Philip Marlowe from March 28th, 1950, The Sword of Cebu, starring Gerald Moore. Great cast in there, too. Gene Bates, Byron Kane, Tony Barrett, Paul Frees, who was Boris Badenoff on Rocky and Bullwinkle. Barney Phillips, great cast, is heard on CBS. Let's take a quick break, then it's more on the WGN Radio Theater. Yeah, Lisa Wolf.
And that is the work of our producer for the night, Ashley Byhun.
Yes.
So we want to welcome you.
She's
awesome. A crazy beginning of the show, but we want to welcome
Ashley.
We
love Ashley. And we're going to have some pizza.
I'm going to have salad.
We ordered from Giordano's Pizza, and it's sort of a little celebration.
Right. Well, I think every night here should be a celebration.
I got to tell you, this is the first time we've seen it.
Yeah.
We saw some renderings of it, but I didn't see the actual studios until we walked up the elevator.
Right.
We took the elevator up.
No,
18 floors.
But we're going to do a little Facebook Live video next hour, and we'll give you a short little tour, and you can see what we're seeing.
This place is unbelievable.
We're ready to move in. We're
going
to hide in the green room over there.
Absolutely the nicest studio I have ever seen. I mean, it's just incredible, folks. All right, in our next hour, we're going to tune in to the Jack Benny program from 1952. After that, the FBI in Peace and War. You can win a 2018 Chevy Silverado. For details, listen to Steve Cochran weekday mornings at 7:20 on 720 WGN Chicago. If you're a smart speaker user, just say play WGN Radio on TuneIn. It is exactly midnight. Time for the news. Here's David Jennings.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
All right, hour two here in the new studios at 303 East Wacker. And, boy, look at these views here, Lisa. You can look at the river right there. There's some boats going by.
And we have some interesting views of the condos right next door.
Yeah, there's some very interesting.
Some very revealing people.
Yes, very revealing. But this is a family show, so we're not going to
describe it. First and foremost, seeing that it's after midnight, I wanted to wish our newsman extraordinaire, Roger Badish, a happy birthday. He's 66.
Right.
Hope he's not mad at me for saying that, but he should celebrate his birthday. And so happy birthday to Roger.
66 years young.
That's right.
In this hour, Jack Benny, and then in our next hour, the FBI in Peace and War. And it's all brought to you by Cat's Pride. Let's play our game. Cat's Pride, crack the quote. What's the movie?
The movie is Mad Max Fury Road.
Okay.
2015.
Very good. And what do they win?
We are going to give away a family pack of four general admissions to Sycamore Speedway.
All right. Suckering succotash at Sycamore Thief Speedway.
Something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Caller 5, 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. Call us. Play the game on the air live. We'll be right back. It's a race at first base as Abreu looks to get himself a few more All-Star votes against Oakland White Sox. A's today at 1 on WGN-TV.
It's time now for Crack the Quote, brought to you by Cat's Pride.
And we have Ernie to play with us today. Hi, Ernie.
Why, hello, Lisa. Hello, Carl.
Hey, Ernie, how are you?
Good. I recognize your voice. It's definitely recognizable. It's a great voice. Anyhow, we're glad to play with you. We're gonna start right now. Number one, as the world fell, each of us in our own way was broken. Number two, I'm more broken than you think. Number three, and yet here I am, broken and bleeding.
I'm gonna go with number two.
Mm.
All right, I'm more broken than you think.
Ernie.
Carl,
I'm
you don't like that
positive
one?
I'm pretty positive it's number one this
number
time.
Number one, as the world fell, each of us in our own way was broken.
Pretty positive.
All right, let's hear it.
As the world fell, each of us in our own way was broken.
Ding, 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 ding.
Well, Carl lost his bell today. We'll find it.
I don't know where it is.
I'll buy him one for his birthday.
It's not the first thing I've lost.
I wanted Carl to be right. I want him to feel good.
You know what? I know. Me too. It's few and far between, so enjoy that one.
You know, Ernie, these little joys for me.
They're so meaningful.
So meaningful.
But the good news is...
I tried to throw a few out there for you.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. The good news is, Ernie, you are a winner. You've won a family pack of four general admissions to Sycamore Speedway. Get your motor running at the 2018 race season. Visit SycamoreSpeedway.com. Congratulations. You get four tickets. I hope you enjoy your day.
Well, thank you very much.
It's great to hear from you, Ernie.
Appreciate you. All right, Ernie's a big winner. He's going to Sycamore Speedway. I can't resist.
I know. I was going to say, you're going to do that forever.
No, it's not a very good impersonation of Sylvester.
I think it's just the best.
Sylvester.
It's the best.
I can do Kermit the Frog a little better.
A little.
Not so great.
Okay, stick to what you're good at.
You know, Curtis does an amazing...
Mickey.
I mean, he can do a Mickey Mouse.
He does.
Boy, I tell you.
We'll get to that.
Yeah, but right now it's it's time for Jack Benny, which everybody loves Jack
Benny. I know.
Everybody loves Jack Benny. He was on the air from 1932 until 1955.
Amazing.
Incredible. And what I thought was really, it's really interesting about this, and I'm directing this towards Ashley and Curtis here, because they are not familiar with the Jack Benny program, but you're going to listen to this, and you are going to hear amazing similarities to the Seinfeld television show. Seinfeld, I believe, I don't think he's never talked about this, but I believe Larry David and Jerry Seinfeld said, look, let's emulate, in the most positive way, the Jack Benny program. Jack Benny was a comedian. He played himself on his radio show. Jerry Seinfeld is a comedian. He played himself on his television show. Jack Benny surrounded himself with all these zany characters. They always got the laughs. Jack got laughs, but everybody else got more laughs. That's how it was on the Seinfeld show.
Right.
You know, Mary Livingston was Jack's girlfriend on the show, but in real life, it was married to him. Now, that's not the same. You know, he wasn't married, obviously, to Elaine. But was sort of his girlfriend in the beginning, and then it was just his friend throughout. But at first, they dated in the beginning on the Seinfeld show.
Yeah, I remember. It didn't work out, but that's
just
okay.
Incredible similarities between the two. Let's listen to it now. Let's go back to April 6, 1952. On this show, Jack is opening his swimming pool at his Beverly Hills mansion. Here's part one now of the Jack Benny program.
And now the Jack Benny program. Starring Jack Benny with Barry Livingston, Phil Harris, Rochester, Dennis Day, and yours truly, Don Wood. Ladies and gentlemen, the warm weather is here, so let's go out to Jack Benny's house where we find Jack and Rochester cleaning out the swimming pool.
Well, all the water's out of the pool now, boys.
Good. Gosh, this pool sure can get dirty in a few months.
Maybe it would keep cleaner if it had a tile bottom.
Well,
Or even a cement bottom.
Well,
In fact, any kind of a bottom would be better than just plain mud.
Well, I would cement it, but I'm growing rice in the shallow end. Now, Rochester, when we finish cleaning the pool, I want to transplant some tulips in front of the house.
Tulips? Why?
Well, Queen Juliana of the Netherlands is going to be in town soon. She'll be staying at the Beverly Hills Hotel, which is just a couple of blocks from here, and she may drop in,
Oh, then you met Queen Juliana when you were in Holland.
Well, no, Rochester. You see, the day before I arrived in Amsterdam, the Queen had gone to Rotterdam, you see. But her husband, Prince Bernhard, he's a wonderful fellow.
Oh, then you met Prince Bernhard.
Well, no. You see, I went from Amsterdam to Rotterdam. But when I got to Rotterdam, I found out that they had gone back to Amsterdam.
You'd have done better if you'd have gone to Boulderdam.
I guess so. Now, come on, let's start cleaning the pool. Rochester, go over to the other end, and we'll... Oh, look at that frog over there in the corner. Isn't he cute?
Yeah, sure big, too.
Rochester, help me catch him. Oh, he'd make a cute pet. I'd like to keep him.
Anything that's green, you like to save.
Hurry, he's hopping away. Rochester, where'd he go? Where is he?
He jumped up on your head, boss.
On my head? Well, get him off. Get him off, quick.
Hold still, I'll get him.
Hello, Jack. What's all the excitement?
Rochester, get him off.
Boss, boss, Miss Livingston's here. Tip your frog.
Oh, hello, Mary. Oh, darn it. He got away. And I wanted to keep him.
Oh, Jack, you've already got a turtle, a lizard, a garter snake, two crickets, and a caterpillar. What do you want all those things for?
Well, Mary, it's no fun coming home at night to an empty house, you know.
That reminds me of the first time we met.
Huh?
When you leaned over and whispered in my ear, come up to my apartment, honey, and I'll show you my insects.
I was a sly one, wasn't I? Say, Mary, how do you like the way I'm fixing up my backyard?
Oh, it looks fine.
And you know, as soon as the pool is filled, I want you to come over and swim every day.
Oh, I'd like to, Jack, but I'm putting all my money into savings bonds.
Now, wait a minute, Mary. I only charge for the upkeep.
Upkeep? You charge 10 cents for the locker, 15 cents for a bathing suit, and a quarter for the use of the pool.
Well, I don't charge anything for the shower.
No, but the price of towels is ridiculous.
Rochester.
Well, Rochester's right. You charge for everything. 5 cents for a sun chair, 7 cents for a beach umbrella, 10 cents for water wings.
Mary.
You even got a meter on the diving board.
Look, Mary. What are you laughing at?
You've got the only swimming pool that's listed on the New York Stock Exchange.
Stock exchange, stock exchange.
Oh, hello, Mr. Benny. Hello, Mary.
Hello, Dennis.
Oh, hi, kid.
Oh, boy, cleaning out your swimming pool. Are you going to fill it, Mr. Benny?
Well, I really wasn't planning to for another week or so.
Gee, I wish you'd fill it now.
Well...
Go ahead, Jack. Fill it up.
Okay. Rochester, turn the water on.
Oh, boy. Hot diggity. How long will it take?
About a half hour. Now, Dennis, here's a key to the locker. Go in and put on some trunks.
Oh, I'm not going swimming.
Why do you want me to fill the pool?
I'm thirsty.
Kid, I'm not filling the pool for you to drink. If you want to go swimming, that's different.
Well, I'd like to, Mr. Benny, but I can't swim.
Well, you can go wading.
And up to your neck, it's only 15 cents.
Yeah, I lose a fortune on Gary Cooper. Oh, say, Mary, I knew I had something to tell you.
What?
You know the song I wrote, when you say I beg your pardon, then I'll come back to you?
Yeah.
Well, Snooky Lanson, the star of the hit parade, is going to sing it tonight on This Is Show Business.
No kidding.
That's right.
No wonder President Truman isn't going to run again.
Dennis. Dennis, what's my song got to do with President Truman?
They would have blamed that on him, too.
Dennis, instead of being sarcastic about my song, let me hear the one you're going to do on the program.
Okay.
Oh, hold on, my tongue, hard, pong, hard boy, on my belly.
Hey, you over there, just harvest the rice. Don't eat it. Go ahead, Dennis, sing, will you?
Soon,
with a love dear to dream of, dear. You'll stay like a rosebud in June. So keep my love in your heart. Remember the love tales we told. For with my love in your heart, my darling, you.
Very good, Dennis. Now, if you want to stick around, you can help me fix up.
Hiya, kid.
Oh, hello, Phil.
Oh, hello, Phil.
Well, well, clean out the old pool, huh? Getting ready to open for business, eh, Jackson?
Yep. Say, Phil, would you like your job back again as lifeguard?
Not after what happened last year when that fella nearly drowned.
What happened, Phil?
Before I could save him, I had to buy a ticket to get in the pool.
Well, Phil, I can't afford to pay you a lifeguard salary. Rochester, what are you doing?
I'm testing the diving board.
Well, good, good. And when you're through with that, you can,
Hey, Jackson, come over here a minute, will you? I got something I want to discuss with you.
With me?
Yeah.
Well, look, Jack, I've got a dentist appointment. I better be running along.
Wait a second, Mary. I'll just see what Phil wants.
Oh, all right.
What's on your mind, Phil?
Well, it's about Bagby, my piano player.
What about him?
He's leaving my orchestra.
No. Bagby's quitting your band? Why?
He's going back to his old job.
His old job? What was that?
Professor of psychology at Heidelberg.
Phil, you mean to stand there with that bottle in your hand and tell me that Bagby, your piano player, used to be a professor of psychology?
Are you kidding? He's got one of the most brilliant minds in the country. You ought to see his degrees. He's got his A.B., M.A., L.L.B., Ph.D., and his S.Q.C.T.F.
S.Q.C.T.F., what's that?
San Quentin, class of 34.
Phil.
He was voted the alumnus most likely to come back.
Phil.
For a while, we thought he was going to graduate magna cum gas chamber.
Well, Phil, what are you worried about? You can get somebody to replace Bagby.
Yeah, but that ain't what bothers me, Jackson. It's his piano, and he's going to take it with him.
Well, for heaven's sake, can't you get another piano?
Not one that makes ice cubes.
Ice cubes?
When you press the foot pedals, you get draft beer.
I wondered why that piano said Stein instead of Steinway. Well, Phil...
Jack, I've got to be going. I'll be late for the dentist.
Wait a minute, Mary. I'll go with you. I haven't had my teeth cleaned in a long time.
Okay.
Phil, I'll discuss this with you later.
Okay, Jackson. So long.
So long. Come on, Mary. Let's go.
I'm not going anywhere with you. It'll take that frog off your head.
Is he still there? Get off. Get off. Okay, Mary. Let's go.
Hey, Mr. Benny, was that a frog on your head?
Yes.
Yeah, I thought your toupee was winking at me.
Well, it wasn't. Come on, Mary, let's go.
You know who was doing the vocal sounds of the frog right there, Lisa? Any
you?
Idea?
You?
No, was not me. I can guarantee you it was not. That was Mel Blanc.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, Mel Blanc. He did all kinds of vocal sounds on The Benny Show, and he would play parts too, characters yeah. as well. He was with Jack Benny many, many years. You know, his radio series was on 23 years.
Enormous.
And then his television show, 15 years. Think about that. Just think about that.
Okay, I'll keep thinking.
38 years between radio and TV.
That was quick, though, actually. Huh? Good thinking there.
You know, math, I did pretty good at it.
I know. You studied to
like
be an astronaut, didn't you?
About a C-plus in math.
That's That's more than I would expect.
Actually, math was one of my best subjects.
Didn't you like the teacher?
Oh, yeah. I had a crush on my
teacher.
That's
what I'm thinking.
My geometry teacher had a major, major crush on
her. So you probably did well.
She was something, let me tell you.
Yeah.
Yeah. She was, it's a family show, so I can't say, but she was something.
What were you, are you talking high school?
High school.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. She's out there.
Yeah.
She's out
there. I'm sure she's thinking about you as well.
She was married then, though, so, you know.
Yeah.
I just.
That's too bad. Otherwise, it would have worked out.
Yeah. Probably would have.
Yeah.
25 years difference.
Right. I'm sure it would have been fine if she wasn't married.
If she was a cougar, it would have been worked out.
Yeah.
It would have worked out really
and a few other things, like maybe a sexual predator or something. Oh, my gosh.
I'm not talking about in high school. I'm talking about after high school. You know?
Okay. I thought you meant like when you were 15.
But never got a call from her, so
that's
I'm guessing she didn't feel the same way about me.
Yeah.
Of course,
well, maybe she does now.
Basically, my life story.
Right.
I'm
familiar with that.
All right. So let's take a quick break. When we come back, it's more of Jack Benny. Then a little later, it's the FBI in Peace and War. Stick around. All right. We're going to take a break for news. When we come back from the news, it's the conclusion to the Jack Benny program. Then it's the FBI in Peace and War. And I can't tell who's doing news. Is it David still or is it Roger?
No, it's the birthday boy.
It's 12:30. It's Roger Badish.
Oh, my gosh.
Generally,
it just popped up on the screen.
Yeah, generally I can look at a screen and see who the...
Aubrey's working on it.
Who is our awesome newsman. do you have an N on your chest for newsman?
I'm newsman.
The newsman.
And now the mild-mannered reporter from our great metropolitan
radio
station.
You're supposed to do it like first you're supposed to be like talking like this because you're Clark Kent, you're newsman.
Well, wait a minute. I got to do my Superman.
That?
Can
you're
you see?
Bossy.
Ready? Watch. Are you watching?
I'm watching. Yeah, look at that.
Fights a never-ending battle for truth. Just, he whips those
justice
glasses right off.
In the American way. Yes, indeed. All right. Well, it's time for the news at 12:31. Here is the newsman himself and birthday boy, Roger Badge.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
Well, before we get back to Jack Benny, I want to... remind all of our listeners about our cruise coming up, folks. You need to come with us. We want you sailing with us. It is February 16th through the 23rd, right, Lisa?
That's a perfect week to get out of Chicago winter and come to the Caribbean and come to a few islands with us, St. Martin, St. Thomas, the Bahamas. I can't think of anything better but to go on a classic radio cruise on Royal Caribbean with us. What else could be better that week?
And it's the Symphony of the Seas, the largest passenger ship in the world.
It holds 6,000 passengers.
Wow.
But we not only have the benefit of all of the wonderful amenities of the ship and the islands, we have an additional special activities just for our group, all revolving around classic radio.
Including, you can win a starring role in our radio reenactment.
But these ships are like cities. So the bottom line is you can do what you want, not do what you want. We just hope that you'll join us. So
It's going to be a blast.
It's going to be a blast.
Yeah. So it's February 16th
through
the 23rd. Yeah, it's going to be a blast.
You can check it out on our website. There's a link. Go to WGNRadioTheater.com. You can just click on the link for Royal Caribbean Symphony of the Seas, and you'll get all the information that you need. And the prices begin at $14.95 a person.
Yeah, it'll take you right to Kelly Cruises, which is our exclusive travel partner for this cruise. And
Seven days, seven nights. This is a wonderful week away.
It's going to be so much fun. Don't miss it. Make sure you just click on that. Go to our website, WGNRadioTheater.com. Click on the banner. Go to Kelly Cruises. Learn all about this cruise. And then leave your information. They'll call you during the week.
Yeah, we only have a limited number of cabins, so we hope that you'll sign up now. Don't wait too long.
Yeah, very good. All right, Lisa, let's get back now, everybody, to the Jack Benny program.
Mary, which office is your dentist in?
Oh, he's way down at the end of the... Say, Jack, isn't that Don Wilson coming out of that office?
Why, yes, and he's got the quartet with him. Hey, Don! Don!
Well, hello, Jack. Hello, Mary.
Hello, Don.
I didn't expect to see you here.
I took the sportsman to see my dentist.
Oh, yes. Hello, fellas. Don, what's the matter with him?
They all had to have a tooth pulled.
Don. Don, the four of them had to have a tooth pulled at the same time?
That's right.
I've never seen a quartet like that in my life. They all have colds at the same time. They have headaches at the same time. Measles at the same time.
Yeah, now they're going home. It's their children's birthday.
How do you like that? Each one had a tooth pulled, huh?
Yes, Jack, and in that condition, I don't think they'll be able to do the commercial on the show.
Well, why not?
Well, look at Marty's jaw. It's all swollen, and he sings the lead.
But, Don, we have to have a commercial.
I know, Jack, but with Marty's jaw swollen, people won't be able to tell what he's singing about.
Maybe Marty will feel better by the time they have to do it on the show.
Well, I hope so. Goodbye, kids.
Goodbye. Bye.
Jack, my dentist's office is down at the end of the hall.
Oh, yes. I hope he can take me, too. While I'm getting mine cleaned, it wouldn't hurt me to have them checked for cavities.
Well, here we are.
May I help you people?
Yes, nurse. I have an appointment with Dr. Foster. I'm Mary Livingston.
Oh, yes. You're just in time. Go right in the first office on your left.
Thank you.
Miss, while I'm here, I want to find out about my teeth.
Yes, sir. When did you leave them?
No. No, I'd like Dr. Foster to examine them.
Well, Dr. Foster has no appointments open. However, Dr. Nelson has a cancellation. I'm sure he can take you.
Well, good, good.
I'll have to get some information first. Your name?
Jack Benny.
Occupation?
A violinist.
Oh. Yes, I heard one of your concerts last summer.
Oh, from the stage of the Philharmonic?
No, from the diving board of your swimming pool. Now, your age, please.
Well, how old would you guess me to be?
28?
No. No, I'm a little older than that. Guess again.
61.
For your information, miss, I happen to be 39.
Oh.
Yes, oh.
Well, you'll have to wait a few minutes. Dr. Nelson is busy. You can sit right there and wait.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Oh, excuse me.
Hi, Rube.
Oh, hello. I haven't seen you for a long time.
Well, I don't get to town much anymore.
Oh, are you still living in Calabasas?
No, couldn't stand the nightlife, so I moved to a smaller place.
You live in a smaller place than Calabasas? How big is it?
Well, when four kids play Ring Around the Rosie, they circle the town.
Well, that's really a small town, isn't it?
You ain't kidding, Rube.
What?
They had to widen the street to put the white line down the middle.
Hey, that's pretty good.
By the way, I saw your last television show. You make a good-looking woman.
Well, thanks, but I don't intend to dress like that again.
You ought to. You ain't nothing the way you are.
Look, mister, I only sat down here...
Dr. Nelson, we'll see you now, Mr. Benny.
Thank you.
So long, Rube.
Goodbye, goodbye.
Right through that door, Mr. Benny.
Thank you. Oh, doctor.
How do you do?
Look, doctor, I'd like to have...
Don't tell me you have a toothache.
No, I don't have a toothache at all. I only want...
Just sit down and leave the rest to me.
But, doctor, all I want is... Doctor. Doctor, why are you strapping me in this chair?
Well, the last time I pulled a tooth, I yanked too hard and threw the patient out the window.
Oh, my goodness, did the tooth come out?
All of them. He hit a fire plug.
Now, look, Doctor, I don't need an extraction. All I want you to do is examine my teeth.
Yeah, very well, very well. Open your mouth, please. Wider. Wider, so I can look way back. Yeah. Yeah, that's fine. I can see everything now. And your teeth look fine.
Good.
But you better do something about that appendix.
Appendix?
And now just hold still and I'll complete the examination.
Excuse me, Doctor.
Oh, yes, nurse?
J. Howard McGrath is here from Washington.
Oh, to have his teeth cleaned?
No, sharpened. He wants to bite someone.
Well, I'm busy right now. And, nurse, send in my technician. I have to make an X-ray.
Yes, Doctor.
And now, Mr. Benny, before my technician comes in, I just want to make one final check. Open your mouth.
Doctor. Doctor, why are you spinning my pivot tooth?
I used to be a disc jockey.
A disc jockey?
And now I'd like to dedicate this next tooth for Billy, Mervin, Manny, Jesse, and all the boys at Hickey's Bar, and happy birthday to Jeanette.
Now cut that out! Look, I just came here for...
Are you set for me, Doctor?
Yes, I have a patient here who requires an X-ray.
Oh, very well. You operate the camera and I'll swing the chair around so you'll get a good picture.
Is that the technician? He looks like a frog I met this morning.
Well, he's my X-ray man, and he's made some very good dental pictures. Perhaps you've seen them. They played all the neighborhood theaters.
Dental pictures?
Yes. Sorry, wrong molar.
What?
David and Bicuspid.
Look, Doctor.
And the latest one with Montgomery Clift, A Space in the Gum.
For heaven's sake. Look, Doctor, I haven't got all day. If your man is going to take this X-ray, let him take it.
I'm going to take the picture. He's going to direct it.
Direct it?
Now, tilt your head back, Mr. Benny, and on cue, open your mouth, raise your tongue, press it over toward your right cheek, smile.
Look at what's going on here.
Lights, camera, roll them!
Doctor!
Don't move! We're trying for an Academy Award!
All I wanted was a simple examination.
I have the picture, Doctor. I'll have it developed in a minute.
Hey, good. Hey, Mr. Benny, while we're waiting, just sit back and relax.
Thank goodness.
Come in.
Should I sing now, Doctor?
Yes, Miss Berner.
Sing? Doctor, what is this?
Our floor show. We can't afford magazines.
What? A floor show?
When your sweetheart has killed.
Look, Miss Berner. Miss Berner. The frog sounded better. Miss Berner, wait a minute. Look, wait a minute, Miss Berner. Wait a minute. Wait a minute! Oh, brother.
What did you stop me for?
Miss, do you happen to know when you say I beg your pardon and I'll come back to you?
No.
Good, good.
Well, here are the results of the X-ray, Doctor.
Hey, let me see. Oh, yes, a wonderful picture.
Doctor, what does it show?
Hey, just a moment, just a moment. According to this X-ray, you have an abscess.
An abscess?
Yes, it's sort of a pocket.
Gee.
Hey, it's nothing to be alarmed about. Finding a little pocket under a tooth is very common. Although yours is unusual.
Why?
It has money in it.
Look, Doctor, if you think I'm going to stay in this chair...
Now, settle down. It'll only take a minute. Oh, nurse.
Yes?
Grab the patient by the hair and hold his head back.
Yes, Doctor. Whoops.
Well, then grab him by the ear.
Doctor, I only came here for an examination. Well, that's
Doctor,
all.
Doctor,
Doctor, I want to have a word with you.
Yeah, excuse me. Really? Are you sure?
Yeah.
Then you better help me. Nurse, hand me my forceps.
Forceps.
Novocaine.
Novocaine.
Needle.
Needle.
Swab.
Swab.
Burrs.
Burrs.
Straight chisel.
Straight chisel.
Drill.
Drill.
Coat.
Coat.
Hat.
Hat.
Suitcase.
Suitcase.
Doctor. Doctor, what are you doing?
Our lease is up. We're moving.
What?
Come on, nurse.
Doctor. Doctor, let me out of this chair. Dr. Nelson. Dr. Nelson, don't leave me alone.
When you're sweetheart.
Doctor, come back. At least give me some Novocaine. Doctor.
Ladies and gentlemen, the very best Easter gift of all is the support you give through Easter Seals to children who need your help. These seals provide medical care, nursery centers, and many other things that are needed. So give and give generously to the Easter Seal Agency in your community. Or send your contribution to Crippled Children, care of your local post office. Thank you.
Oh, hello, Jack.
Oh, hello, Mary.
How'd things go at the dentist?
What a crazy dentist. I came in, he says, how do you do? He has a crazy x-ray man, he has a girl singing songs in the office, he makes movies.
Well, if it's that bad, why don't you change dentists?
No, I think I'll just change writers. Good night, folks.
This is Don Wilson reminding you to listen to your hit parade with Guy Lombardo every Thursday night. The Jack Benny program has been selected as one of the programs to be heard by our armed forces overseas through the facilities of the Armed Forces Radio Service. Stay tuned for the Amos and Andy Show, which follows immediately. This is the CBS Radio Network.
That's Don Wilson there doing the announcing. Don was his long-time announcer. I mean, was with him the whole time on radio and TV. So over 30 years, that's great. They had just a terrific relationship, and he brought Don with him, whether he was on NBC or CBS. And people like Phil Harris and Dennis Day, Mel Blanc, of course, Mary Livingston. He had to bring her. That was his wife.
Well, he still doesn't have to bring her. Do you think we'll be together for 30 years or more, Carl? What do you think?
I don't think you could do it.
About over a third of the way there.
I think you're getting tired of me.
Really?
I could tell.
What do I do?
You're just super mean to me all the time.
Oh, super, I know.
It's just so mean.
Yeah, I just can't help myself.
All the time to me.
I'm pretty rough.
We carpooled today to this studio.
We did.
We carpooled because I didn't know where I was going. I didn't know where to park.
Yeah.
I don't know how to work an app.
There's
something called Spot Hero or something?
Well, I downloaded Spot Hero on Carl's phone, and I punched in his credit card and then took him right to the parking lot that Roger had recommended.
Roger
and
picked a good parking lot.
We're on lower level 5 because
somewhere.
There's no spaces.
Yeah.
Are you giving me the finger?
And I was driving. I have a big Jeep, like a big kind of oversized raised Jeep.
Next time you drive your Yugo, you'll fit in the spaces better.
And I was... This is like a very small, narrow thing where I'm having to maneuver this Jeep. It's not good.
You'll have to learn how to drive a little
not
better.
Good. All right, well, we have to go to a... Yes, Roger.
I was on the first level.
Ah, well.
Well, we came...
Because you're first.
Earlier than you did.
You're number one.
It's your birthday. You ought to be on level one.
And there's a ribbon I had to cut. It's your birthday.
Very true.
The birthday ribbon.
Let's take a quick break. We'll be right back. Kidoki, Lisa. We're almost through hour two. We have another hour of classic radio coming your way, folks. In fact, in that hour, we'll have a great FBI in Peace and War episode. We did change the original episode that we were going to play, that we promoted that we were going to play it, that I think is on the website. It's now corrected. We're playing a show called Ladies in Lace from 1957. The first one had some sound issues. This one sounds great. Ladies in Lace, that's coming up on FBI and Peace and War in the next hour. And make sure you text us because we love getting your texts. The number is 312-981-7200.
Right, and stay tuned. We are going to be giving away a desktop indoor weather station on our Cats Pride contest, so we hope you'll call in for that as well.
All right, very, very good. Let's see, tomorrow night, tonight, when we come back here, it's just a two-hour show. We only do 2 hours now on Sunday. I know.
Why? I know. Everybody's asking why. Just so you know, we didn't make these decisions.
I'm bummed out about it, but that's what the deal is. We're 3 hours on Saturday, 2 hours on Sunday. But when we come back here tonight, we're going to have a couple of more great radio shows for you.
We have The Adventures of the Thin Man and Duffy's Tavern, which is always a favorite.
The Thin Man is really great.
You're going to
love that. And then Duffy's Tavern is
always great. Of course.
So make sure you tune that in when we come back tonight at 11 p.m. But right now it's time for the news. You can win a 2018 Chevy Silverado. For details, listen to Steve Cochran weekday mornings at 720 on 720 WGN Chicago. If you're a smart speaker user, just say play WGN radio on TuneIn. Time for the news. It's exactly 1 o'clock in the morning. Here's Roger Badish.
Some dueling banjos.
I'm pretty good at this,
fiddles. Yeah, you're a good musician.
Hang on.
You're even a better singer.
I just messed up a chord there. Okay, there we go. This is hour three of the WGN Radio Theater. Lisa and I and the whole gang is here every Saturday and Sunday beginning at 11 p.m. We're here for 3 hours on Saturday night and then 2 hours on Sunday, so 5 hours of classic radio shows. And in this hour, hour three of our Saturday show, our first program in the new studios here at 303 East Wacker is FBI in Peace and War from 1957. By 1957, Lisa, radio drama was really on its way out.
TV was the newfangled thing.
It really, really was. I mean, television came to be around the late 40s. And everybody had a television set by the mid-1950s, for sure.
Yeah, they had one.
Yeah.
One in the living room.
I was born in 1963, and I remember we had a big television set.
It probably wasn't that big, really, though.
No, it was probably like
an 80-inch screen or something.
No, it was like the screen was probably a foot and a half.
Yeah.
You know, but it was a big console television.
Of course, yeah, with the antennas on top.
And this is a true story. And if my mom is listening, if my sister Carlene and my brother are listening, we were watching Goldfinger. It was like a premiere, you know, like on television. It was in the theaters, but then they were bringing it to television for the first time. And it was in the late 60s, early 70s. And it was color, right? We were watching it in color. And you know the scene where she's dead because they painted her all gold, this girl?
Yeah.
Right? And they're about to show her in all gold, and the TV blew up.
Literally?
Poof. Like poof. Like the screen, like we were all, huh? So I'll never forget watching, I was a James Bond fan then, and as I am a James Bond fan now, because I think I actually am James Bond.
Oh, yeah.
Don't tell anyone.
No, I always think
actually
of you that way.
Actually 007.
When I see you, I think 007, Carl Amari, synonymous.
I'm the James Bond who plays classic radio shows.
I know. I feel that way, too.
And so it was like, Bond, we're going to watch Goldfinger.
Right. Didn't work out.
Poof.
My earliest memories are putting foil on the antennas and moving them around different directions so you have a better picture.
Sure.
Because lines would come through it and it would move up and down. I'm old.
How many knobs did your TV have?
Not too many. Maybe two, three. That's it.
Okay.
And you had to do it by hand, of course.
Well, right.
You know, a few stations.
We had five. Uh-huh. We had the on-off and then the channel selector, but the channel selector had like a fine tuner wheel around it.
And then we had
three small knobs for the light and dark and contrast
and
different things. and ours was... Now, when you say console, was it like there was a stereo on with it or anything
probably
else
like
with
a
it?
Wood casing.
You had small knobs? I'd rather have big knobs. You okay over there, Roger? Did you hit your head?
Roger, I can't see you. See, this is our moment to lock eyes, and I don't see you.
I'm a little guy in the box. You don't see me?
No, I don't have that screen.
I see him.
You see it? You got it over by you?
I don't have
it by
me.
I'm trying to hold the top from coming down on top of me here.
I don't see you.
You can see me.
Well,
we have no camaraderie.
All right, well, we have FBI and Peace and War in this hour. We're going to play our game, Cat's Pride, Crack the Quote.
Crack the Croat.
Quote. Roger, play the game with us.
I will.
All right, the number to call, 312-981-7200. I don't know this movie at all.
The movie is How to Train Your Dragon.
It's
an animated film, right?
Yes, and the prize is a desktop indoor weather station, the coveted prize that everybody is clamoring for.
Yeah, I'm on a streak.
Me.
I've got one in a row.
No.
I've got a streak going
one
here,
in a
Roger.
Row is where he's at.
So 312-981-7200. Call right now. Play the game with us.
Caller six.
Caller six. We'll be right back. Okay.
I could sing it.
It's time now for Crack the Quote, brought to you by Cat's Pride.
We have Edward on the line. Hi, how are you?
Good. How are you guys doing?
Great. So glad you called in. You ready to play the game?
I'm ready.
All right. Ready. There we go. Roger, you listening?
I am.
Okie doke, just checking. Number one, never laugh at live dragons. Number two, today you will learn to fight dragons.
Okay.
Number three, speak politely to an enraged dragon. I know.
I'm going to go number three.
Speak politely to an enraged dragon. Roger?
Yes.
Oh, gosh, it's been a while since I've seen it. I'll go to number two.
Number two, today you will learn to fight dragons.
That's the one I'm going to pick, too.
Okay, let's hear it. I could say it for you.
I'm going to fight dragons.
Roger.
You were right. You got two in a row, but you know
two
what?
Two in a row.
Edward, you are the winner, and we are so happy to give you this prize. Everybody loves this prize. It is a desktop indoor weather station brought to you by...
I don't have one of these either. Edward, I don't have one of these.
You interrupted me.
Hang on a second.
No, you hang on a second.
Edward,
my wife is a weather freak, so she's going to love it.
Now, Edward, this is... I'm a co-host to this show. Lisa has one of these.
One.
Thank you, sir. Lisa has one of these. She has the Never Measure. And I don't have either one of them, Lisa.
I wonder what that tells you.
Edward, I think Lisa's just hoarding all of the prizes.
No doubt.
Yeah. Well,
Edward's
I'm
on my side.
I'm a
I can
hoarder.
Tell.
Maybe
Edward's
with
on my
that
side.
New studio, maybe with the new studio you can get a new one. Huh?
Yeah, I need
he needs a new something. That's
and
for
a
sure.
Desktop
maybe
weather station.
A new attitude.
I want one of those.
Edward, you won the desktop indoor weather station. It is brought to you by American Weathermakers Heating and Cooling, the 60-Minute Men. Call 855-955-HVAC. Congratulations. Thank you again for calling
in.
Way
to go, buddy. Thanks, Ed.
Take care.
Get in the studio.
Thank you. We are.
We're loving it. It's absolutely magnificent. They really did it right. This is the most beautiful studio I've ever seen. And I've been working in radio since 1981. Okay, that's a lot of years.
It is.
It's a lot of lumps. And anyway, I've seen a lot, been inside a lot of studios. I've gotten fired from a lot of radio stations, lots of radio stations. And I've never seen anything like this.
Okay, well, hopefully you won't get fired from this one.
I hope not.
we're gonna sit tight, and maybe if we play that the last classic radio show, we'll be here a little while longer.
Let's do that right now. FBI in Peace and War. It was a drama series. It was inspired by Frederick Lewis Collins' book of the same name. Came to CBS Radio in 1944. Lasted all the way until 1958, so basically 15 seasons, long time. It was produced and directed by Max Marson and Betty Mandeville. It was dramatizing our FBI in action, Lisa, through the perception of the criminals. That's what was so interesting about this show. You really saw the side of the criminal element and the FBI hunting them down. Very cool. This starred Martin Blaine and Donald Briggs as FBI agent Shepard, you know, on this particular episode, Martin Blaine plays Shepard. And then it had New York's finest supporting cast in it because it was broadcast out of New York. This particular episode is called Ladies in Lace, and it's from January 20th, 1957. Here now is part one of the FBI in Peace and War.
The FBI in Peace and War. Another great story based on Frederick L. Collins' copyrighted book, The FBI in Peace and War. Drama, thrills, action. Tonight's story, Ladies in Lace.
Betty! Betty, I'm home. Hurry! Come see what I bought for us.
Oh, I was beginning to get quite frantic.
About me?
Well, of course, you've been gone for almost 2 hours. New York is such a large and frightening city. All that traffic, why, it's terrifying, Clarice. It's simply terrifying.
Bertie, I'm all right. You mustn't get in such a tizzy about me, dear. You worry too much.
And why shouldn't I worry about my lovely, devoted sister? And didn't Papa always say, Bertie, you look after Clarice. You take care of your little sister. It's a cruel world, and she needs your protection.
Really, Bertie, I am over 21.
Just the same.
And it's been 40 years since dear sweet Papa passed on. Now, see what I bought.
Well, Bertie.
Clarice.
The very best Wilshire bone china.
Oh, I declare, the most delicate teapot I've ever seen. Simply the most delicate. Must have been very expensive.
Oh, you're angry with me.
No, dear, but our funds are running low.
Oh, I just couldn't resist it, Bertie. Besides, I couldn't let the young man think I was mere shabby gentility.
Young man?
The gentleman I met in the chinaware shop, and he was so kind. He dropped me off in a cab.
Oh?
Such a pleasant young man, so considerate and protective. His name is Frank Carson. I invited him for tea tomorrow. I hope you don't mind, Bertie.
Now, that all depends.
He's in Wall Street.
Really?
His father's the head of a brokerage house.
Well, in that case, he's surely welcome.
Bertie, you remember George Walton?
Oh, the nice young man who asked Papa for your hand.
Yes. Mr. Carson reminds me so much of George. The shape of his head, his soft smile. You know, Bertie, it's the only thing I ever regretted Papa doing, taking all George's money.
But, Clarice, we had to survive more than just like common folks. We were the Jessops of New Orleans. Papa had standards to maintain.
I suppose, but how different things might have been. Bertie.
Yes?
May we wear our Madeira lace collars and cuffs when Mr. Carson joins us for tea tomorrow?
Why, certainly. After all, we must make the best possible impression on Mr. Carson.
Madeira lace always makes me feel so imposing, so regal.
As Papa says, don't you girls ever forget for one instant that you're the Jessops of New Orleans. Hold your heads high and walk like queens. And most of all, maintain your standards no matter what the cost to other folks.
It takes all kinds to make a criminal world. The Jessup sisters had moved about it in bunco circles for years. With the passage of time, except for two brief pauses spent in prison, Clarice and Bertie Jessup perfected their trade to the point where they operated without variation the same swindle. Step one, a likely victim was selected, always a man of means. Step two, he was instilled with gentlemanly respect for these sweet, harmless ladies who seemed as delicately old world as the lace they wore.
Papa always said clothes definitely do not make the lady unless they're trimmed with Madeira lace. Well,
from all you've told me, your father must have been a fine and sensitive gentleman.
Papa was a Jessup, a New Orleans Jessup.
He would have liked you, Mr. Carson. You're just the sort of gentleman Papa relished.
Why, thank you, Miss Bertie.
Yes, indeed. Papa would have really enjoyed taking you into his circle of friends. More tea?
Oh, thank you, Miss Clarice. No, I must be going. I've been here almost 2 hours already.
Oh, I declare, that long? Seems like old times, doesn't it, Clarice? At home when we used to sit with Papa on the veranda and listen to the birds chirping in the bayou.
Yes. Remembrance of things past.
Oh, it must have been lovely and peaceful there.
Papa said a lady should never be prideful, but let me tell you, Mr. Carson, the Jessup estate was the showplace of the country.
And you've never gone back after selling it just to see it?
Oh, we didn't sell it, Mr. Carson.
Oh?
We couldn't do that to Papa's memory.
Every inch of that soil was holy to Papa, even the swampland.
So we've just held on to it. No matter what.
Oh, with the cost of living today, it isn't easy, but somehow we manage without selling off the Jessup place.
There aren't any of your breed left in this world. Nowadays, everybody seems to worship the almighty dollar. Everybody's out to take everybody else.
Oh, what a horrible thought.
Ah, but unfortunately true. Well, ladies, thank you for one of the most pleasant and refreshing afternoons of my life.
The pleasure was ours, Mr. Carson.
And do come and have tea with us again.
May I?
Next Saturday, same time.
Oh, I'll be here. And thank you again.
Thank you for making two old ladies very happy.
Well, Bertie,
you were right. He's every inch a gentleman. But remember what Papa said.
Girls, sentiment is an admirable quality in womanhood, but never, never mix it with business. So, we'll get in touch with Mr. Hopkins immediately.
Yes, you phone him, dear, while I brew some nice fresh tea for us.
The Jessup sisters played their swindle game without variation. When steps one and two had been completed, step three was set in motion. For this phase, an accessory was called in.
My commission will be the same as usual, ladies?
Of course, Mr. Hopkins.
And the transaction with your Mr. Carson, the same?
Naturally, the very same.
As Papa said, times may change, but human nature never does. So girls, never forsake the old for the new.
And Papa knew what he was talking about. Papa's record was perfect. Not one arrest.
Yeah, very well, ladies, very well. Just as long as I get the percentage legitimately due me.
Mr. Hopkins, just what do you mean?
Well, I had an idea that I may have been done out of my proper share in our last venture.
I declare, how dare
you? No, I'm not saying you did shortchange me. And I'm not saying you didn't. It was just a notion I had.
Mr. Hopkins, please have the good grace to remember that Bertie and I are not just common ordinary thieves. We, sir, are Jessups.
In addition to Madeira lace, the Jessup sisters showed a particular favoritism for fine chinaware. It was this second weakness which put the Bureau on their trail. On the morning of June 6, 1954, Agent Reynolds came into my office with the lead.
Steve, the check was forwarded to the Bureau for a routine analysis.
A bank check dated May 15th, made payable to an Evanston, Illinois chinaware store, had bounced. The check had been signed by Clarice Jessup.
$184 down the drain. Believe me, gentlemen, I would rather have broken that china with my own hands than lose the money that way.
We know how you feel, Mr. Cronin. Now, you said Jessup had made other purchases previously.
Quite a few.
And always the same brand of china.
My best imported product.
The trade name?
Wilshire. It's made by an English firm. The very best and the most expensive.
Naturally, you were never suspicious.
About her? Don't be ridiculous. She looked every inch a lady, the reliable old-fashioned kind, particularly the way she dressed.
Down to the lace collar.
That's right, but I guess it was as phony as she.
Not the lace collar. Genuine Madeira.
It should choke her.
Getting back to the chinaware, she remarked you said that she'd own only one brand.
That's right, Wilshire.
And previously, she'd always paid cash.
Yes, I suppose that was to build up confidence.
I don't know.
Well, what do you mean you don't know? That's the way these crooks operate, don't they?
The Jessup sisters have always stuck to their one particular trade, and it doesn't include passing bum checks.
Well, it looks like they've started another one, and it had to be my luck that I was their first customer.
No, Mr. Cronin, I'm afraid you were just an emergency victim. They were probably running low on funds.
Well, not a good that does me.
Believe me, it'll do their next victim a great deal less good.
Back to Ladies in Lace in just a moment.
Now, let me tell you about a lunch I had with a couple of reporters the other day. We were talking about the government and what makes it operate when a thought occurred to me. You know, funny thing, I said, they call one department the State Department when it handles all our foreign affairs. Wonder why? Joe Dillon, he writes political news, spoke up and said, actually, the State Department does more than handle foreign affairs. It also publishes all the laws that have been passed by Congress, and it also issues all the passports and visas for the U.S. Then, as the waitress finished pouring our second cup of coffee, she said, if you ever get on a quiz program, you can win a trip to the moon by telling them that the State Department has the job of making sure the official seal of the United States doesn't get lost. And also, it acts as a sort of governmental Emily Post. Then she dropped the bill on the table with the words, did you ever hear of the Division of Protocol? That's a part of the State Department. That's the outfit that makes sure the foreign diplomats get introduced properly and seated in the right places at official dinners. So we each put another dime in her tip and went back to work.
He put a dime in her tip. Wow. Big spender, that guy right there. Hi, Ashley. I mean, he put another dime in her tip. So she probably got like 30 cents as a tip. Back then, maybe that was, you know, 1957. I guess maybe 30 cents was a pretty good tip, huh, Lisa?
I would be happy with that today, just
saying. I know. Well. All right, that's the first portion of the FBI in Peace and War, January 20th, 1957, Ladies in Lace. And you cannot mistake the voice of Jackson Beck. Jackson Beck is in this program. He's not only the narrator, but he's playing a part as well. Jackson Beck was the voice, the announcer on Superman. Roger was doing it earlier. The Adventures of Superman.
Yeah, a mild-mannered reporter for a great metropolitan newspaper.
And you know what, Roger? This is a true story.
Yeah.
Years and years ago, I mean, we're talking 30-plus years ago, probably, I was in New York at one of these radio conventions, and Jackson Beck was there.
Oh, no.
And I went up to him. He was a short guy. He's shorter than me.
Get out.
Believe it or not.
Short guy and a big voice.
I towered over Jackson Beck.
That's saying something.
And, yeah. And I went up to him and I said, Mr. Beck, I would love to. I have my, you know, trusty tape recorder with me. Love to do an interview with you. And, he was a little crabby. He was kind of crabby. He was probably one of the crabbier guys that I met there. Because I met, like, Lon Clark, you know, Nick Carter, Master Detective. He was great. And I met, Ezra Stone, who played Henry Aldrich. He was awesome. And Jackie Kelk, who was Homer Brown, and so many other people. Gildersleeve Willard Waterman was there. Harold Perry wasn't there, but Willard Waterman was there. But anyway, Jackson Beck, he said to me, I want to show you something. He went in his pocket, took out his wallet, showed me his AFRA, not AFTRA.
Right, because there was no TV.
Right. AFRA card.
Mm-hmm.
Number 2.
Ooh.
He was the second person.
Wow.
I'll never forget it. Jackson Beck, second person to join AFRA.
That's amazing.
American Federation of Radio Artists.
Yeah.
Yeah, all right, so there's a little trivia contest, trivia tidbit.
Yeah, there you
morsel.
Go. Just in case we have a competition or a contest some night.
A little morsel for you, just in case it comes up on Jeopardy.
Right.
You know, I'll tell you, you want to impress your friends, mm-hmm. Here's what you do. Tape Jeopardy, DVR Jeopardy.
Oh, you are so
watch
bad.
Watch it a couple of times, then invite people over.
Yeah.
And show them like it's the first time and be like answering all the questions.
I saw something on social
media.
You do
media. That. You've
all
done that.
I saw something on social media where somebody was, they were able to get the time zone previously.
Oh,
of what time zone
now
they were
that's
in.
Adding.
And they watched
it. And then you can watch it again.
And then they watched.
Like 2 hours later.
Yeah, exactly. And they got every answer right. It was
even
amazing.
More notorious devious than what I do. But I do it the easy way. I just DVR it. Invite all your friends over.
Yeah.
Play it and have all the answers.
Well, now you've given away your secret. It won't work anymore.
They're like, wow.
I'm pretty sure I wouldn't have believed you. I would have known there was a hoax involved.
Wow, you are smart.
Oh, yeah.
Real smart.
Let's take a quick break,
Alec.
And then we'll have news. We'll be right back.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
You know what's one of the most exciting things in taking the tour of this amazing facility here at 303 East Wacker, the new WGN studios. The thing that impressed me the most was the couches and how I'm going to be able to sleep on some really comfortable couches here.
Well, that's important.
You know, because back at the, and Curtis was sleeping on one earlier, back at, how was it, Curtis? Pretty good? Yeah, he's giving me the thumbs up over there. We don't know how to talk yet to each other in these, with these studios yet. We'll figure
but
it all out.
But you don't, but we all
do. As long as we're able to play the classic radio, play the classic radio
show. I think the views from the Allstate Skyline Studio are beautiful. We go one direction, we see Navy Pier, and we saw the Ferris wheel, and we saw some fireworks earlier tonight, and another direction, and we look right inside people's apartments. It's pretty exciting, actually.
I'm bringing my binoculars tomorrow.
I think you should.
Yeah. But, the couches look ultra comfortable.
All right. Well,
really
I'll make sure to wake you up
and then
when you need to be up.
There's like a green room. It's not
green.
Quite ready yet for
human consumption.
I was going to say for consumption. But we walked in there because we're nosy. I mean, we're pretty
nosy. Why do you speak for me? You're nosy.
Wait, you're like, let's walk around. Let's check
it out. Didn't say that.
And that's cool because we've never been up here. So
we're going to do a little Facebook Live.
In the candy store.
And we're going to walk around and you're going to follow us because you'll be able to see what we see when we see it.
But I got to tell you, that green room with the ceiling.
The furniture is gorgeous.
It's like state of the art. It's the most beautiful setup I've ever seen. I'm really impressed. Whoever did the
decorating,
or I want to hire that person.
Well, I love the setup here, and we have a beautiful producer's booth, and we're looking at Ashley and Curtis, and it's really great.
And it's very cool.
I even know how to use the button, so I can talk to them.
And you know, we're further away from each other, which is a good thing.
Not much.
Right?
I don't know.
I'd say
it's about the same.
I'd say we're about a foot further away, which is good because you can't reach me and slap
hit you?
Me.
Yeah. Yeah, like I used to do.
Right.
Used to hit you, but now I can't reach you anymore.
So I won't be getting slapped.
This way I
can
just roll my eyes, just like always.
Yeah.
Nothing changed.
We're listening to the FBI in Peace and War. Let's go back to 1957 for the conclusion.
Now, Act Two of tonight's story, Ladies in Lace.
A check of lodging places in Evanston revealed that the Jessup sisters had occupied an apartment in a conservative, middle-class hotel, and that the day after the bum bank draft was passed, they'd moved out bag and baggage, china and old lace. But we had one break.
Destination New York, Steve.
Agent Reynolds had questioned a cab driver whose stand was outside the hotel. He definitely recalled driving them to the depot and helping them aboard a New York-bound train. We shifted our base of operations to New York City.
Papa always warned us against consorting with strangers in a big northern city, but of course he didn't know you, Mr. Carson.
Miss Birdie.
Yes?
About that man who offered you the money for your land.
Walter Hopkins.
Yes. What do you know about him?
Well, only that he seems a proper businessman.
Looks how deceiving you know, ladies.
That's what Papa always says.
And he said he was only interested in buying the swampland.
Just the bayou section of our state. $10,000 for that useless swampland. It seemed more than generous.
Too generous, I'd say offhand.
Mr. Carson, whatever do you mean?
I mean, Miss Birdie, I smell a rat.
What?
I mean, it's a mighty strange thing to offer so much for worthless swampland, unless it's not as worthless as it apparently appears.
I declare.
Ladies.
Yes?
With your permission, I'd like to have a talk with this, Mr. Hopkins. There's just the possibility that someone is trying to pull a fast one here.
Immediately upon our arrival in New York, Agent Reynolds and I began a checkout of all stores in the area dealing in the expensive imported china. We felt that this would be the shortest route between us and the Jessup sisters.
Just keep in mind that Clarice and Bertie Jessup are close personal friends of mine. That's why I'm here, Mr. Hopkins.
Well, I don't recall their mentioning you, Carson.
Well, if you have any doubts, why don't you phone them? They'll tell you I'm acting in their behalf.
Look here, just what do you want?
The question is, Mr. Hopkins, what do you want?
Well, I believe I made my purpose clear to Miss Bertie and Miss Clarice.
I'm not at all sure it is clear.
No? What could be clearer than a bona fide offer of $10,000 for that swampland?
That's the point.
What?
Your bid for that bayou terrain is way out of line.
Oh, now, don't tell me it's worth more.
On the contrary, far less.
What?
Frankly, Mr. Hopkins, your offer is very suspicious.
Now, you watch what you say, Carson. I'm a reputable businessman.
Don't try to outbluff me, Mr. Hopkins. I happen to know some of the ins and outs of business. I'm not a babe in the woods. I'm not the Jessup sisters.
Now, see here. I'm not wasting any more of my time talking to you. I'm dealing directly with the Jessup sisters and not with you.
You'll deal through me, or you won't deal at all.
Is that right?
It most certainly is.
Well, I'll see about that.
You're welcome to try. Good day.
Mr. Carson, wait a minute. Wait.
Yes?
Now, look, there's no reason we can't talk this over like sane gentlemen, is there?
Well...
So, what do you say we start patching our fences with a little drink first?
I prefer a drink after a deal is consummated, not before.
Oh. Then, straight to business, eh?
And the facts, straight.
You mean why I made such a generous offer for that worthless swampland?
Why?
Straight. Last week, oil was discovered on the adjoining property.
Oil? So that's it?
That's it. Definitely.
A very good reason for your generous offer to the Jessup sisters.
And now, Mr. Carson, I'm going to make a very generous offer to you.
Our checkout on the Chinaware stores brought quick and ripe fruit. The proprietor of a Midtown Fifth Avenue shop had some of the information we were seeking.
Yes, sir. I served Miss Jessup personally. Would you mind telling me why the FBI is interested in her?
Well, it's a long story and a long series of swindles perpetrated by her and her sister.
Her? A swindler? Well, I'd never dream.
Nor would most people.
Such a delicate appreciation of Wilshire China.
And the fast buck.
She was in here last...
A week ago Friday, she purchased a Wilshire teapot.
You delivered it where?
We didn't. She took it along with her.
Oh.
But I expect her to return.
Oh?
Yes. She was interested in buying a sugar and creamer set. We were out of stock. I told her we expected a shipment in this week, and I'd put a set aside for her.
And she said she'll be in to pick it up?
She said she'd be in tomorrow afternoon, definitely. I suppose you gentlemen will want to be on hand, too?
We'll be here. Definitely.
And ladies, that's the full and complete story. There's oil on your property, and he offered me a percentage if I could convince you to sell.
Well, I declare.
So now you know the reason Hopkins' offer was so generous.
What a vile man. What a simply vile person. Thank heavens there are men such as you still in the world, Mr. Carson.
As Papa said, girls never fret when dealing with a basically honest man. He'll always reward you in the end by showing his true colors.
And down through the years, we've always profited by this advice of Papa's and have always been rewarded.
And now we want to reward you, Mr. Carson.
But I did nothing but tell you the truth.
Oh, I'm sure that Clarice is as willing as I am to turn that bayou land over to you.
What?
Yes, Bertie, I declare I am as willing as you.
But that land, that oil, it'll be worth a fortune.
Our needs are simple. Your life is just beginning.
No, I couldn't think of it.
We want you to have it.
Well, I couldn't accept. I just couldn't.
We insist.
No.
Bertie, dear, I think we are embarrassing Mr. Carson. Perhaps he would feel easier if we let him pay for the land.
But
what it was worth when we had it assessed after Papa passed on.
You mean that $2,000 assessment?
Yes. I'm sure that would make things more comfortable for you, Mr. Carson.
$2,000? That's ridiculous. Why, Hopkins offered you 10, and it's worth 100 times that. Why, no, I wouldn't think of offering you less if I did offer anything.
All right, Mr. Carson, then. If you insist, we'll accept $10,000. Just give us the money, and we'll consider the matter closed.
$10,000 in cash.
Oh, I declare, Clarice, isn't green a lovely, warm color?
Oh, if Papa were only here to enjoy this moment with him.
It's all right, Clarice. I know he's up there looking down on his girls and smiling. You better start packing. But the sugar and cream I ordered. I promised that gentleman I'd be in this afternoon to pick them up. It'll only take a few minutes, Bertie.
Agent Reynolds and I staked out near the Fifth Avenue China Ware shop and waited.
Here she comes, Steve.
Maurice Jessup showed up as expected. It would have been simple enough to make an arrest on the spot, but we wanted both sisters in tow. Agent Reynolds waited outside while I entered the shop to set up our own operation.
It isn't always a businessman interested in fine china. You are a businessman, aren't you, Mr. Stevens?
Well, yes, in a sense. I deal mostly with the government.
Federal?
Solely.
Sort of contract work, I take it.
Sort of.
Big contracts?
Well...
You big businessmen are much too modest.
It isn't that. It's just that we have to be careful not to let anything out prematurely. So much is involved at times.
Oh, I've always been fascinated to know just what goes on behind closed doors and deals like yours, Mr. Stevens.
Oh, I could tell a few stories.
My sister Betty and I'd be just thrilled to hear them. There's so little excitement in our humdrum lives.
Oh, now you're being modest, I'm sure.
Mr. Stevens.
Yes?
If you could spare the time to take tea with Bertie and me tomorrow afternoon, we'd consider it both an honor and a pleasure.
You just tell me where you live. And believe me, Miss Jessup, the pleasure will be all mine.
No, Clarice, definitely not.
But Bertie...
I've already made our reservations on the morning train.
But he's in government contracts.
I'm surprised at you. Don't you remember what Papa said? Girls, after you consummate a deal, never let the moss grow under your feet. In other words, get out and get out fast. Now, you wouldn't want Papa to stop smiling down on us, would you, dear?
No, Bertie.
Oh, that must be the bellhop. I asked them to send our baggage up from the storage room.
I go, dear.
Miss Jessup.
Why?
I guess this comes as sort of a surprise, eh?
What is it, Therese?
Bertie, this is Mr. Stevens, the gentleman I was telling you so much about.
How do you do? I've brought a friend along. This is Mr. Reynolds. He's sort of a business partner.
Ladies?
Mr. Reynolds was anxious to join in.
But you weren't expected until tomorrow.
Sorry, we couldn't wait.
As a matter of fact, we waited much too long already.
Clarice.
Oh, no.
Oh, yes.
The police.
FBI.
I declare.
So that's what you meant by federal government.
Mm-hmm.
Deceiving my sister that way, sir. You are no gentleman.
I'm sorry, Bertie. If it hadn't been for that china cream and sugar...
Now, don't you fret, dear.
Do you really forgive me?
Of course.
All right, ladies. Let's go.
Mr. Stevens, please. Just one thing.
What's that?
Would you permit us a moment to dress ourselves properly for the occasion? There's some very fine Madeira lace, and we wouldn't feel suitably dressed unless we wore it. Would we, Bertie, dear?
The Jessup sisters made a full and complete confession. Their accomplice, Walter Hopkins, was apprehended shortly thereafter. All three were brought to trial and threw themselves on the mercy of the court. Because of their advanced age, Clarice and Bertie Jessup received reduced sentences of 5 years each. They are now serving those sentences in a federal women's penitentiary, where their simple dress makes them anything but ladies in lace.
Alice Frost played the part of Clarice Jessup. Agnes Young was Bertie Jessup. This radio dramatization for the FBI in Peace and War was written by Ed Adamson. These programs are produced and directed by Betty Mandeville. All names and characters used on the program are fictitious. Any similarity to persons living or dead is purely coincidental. This program is based upon Frederick L. Collins' copyrighted book, The FBI in Peace and War.
and the broadcast does not imply endorsement, authorization, or approval for the Federal Bureau of Investigation.
The FBI in Peace and War has come to you through the worldwide facilities of the United States Armed Forces Radio and Television Service.
All right, there you have it. FBI in Peace and War, January 20th, 1957, Ladies in Lace. And that starred Martin Blaine along with Jackson Beck and also Don Briggs and Alice Frost in that broadcast is heard on CBS. Let's take a quick break, then we're going to chat with Dave Plyer. Stick around. Folks, I carpooled with Lisa on the way to the studio today. You should have seen how nervous she was with me driving. I never seen anything like it.
You know,
she's like, drive
makes
slow
me
now.
Sound like a granny, but let me
drive
explain
slow.
Something. Carl drives
like
a race
slow.
Car
no,
driver.
No, no,
yes,
no.
You do.
Dave, you should have seen this young lady here.
What's this?
She drives
so,
too fast.
No, it's not
scares
true.
It's scary.
I didn't even start Hello. Driving yet.
No, that's not true.
I'm in this. I have this big Jeep.
He's
right?
Driving like oh, crazy.
It's like
man.
A tank. And she gets in the car. She's like, now drive slow. I don't like being
yeah,
a passenger.
I was crying.
Drive slow.
Sorry, now I can hear you.
I'm like, don't worry about it, Lisa. You just sit back, relax. Don't worry about it.
It was not a relaxing ride.
I got
this. Let's just be clear.
I'm sure.
She's a nervous
sure.
Minerva.
Yeah.
He makes me nervous. He's crazy out there.
Is that
there.
Elliot in there?
That is Elliot
I have
Bamber.
One question I need to ask Elliot.
Okay.
How does a man that eats this much food stay so fit?
Yeah, it's true.
And it's not, and I've seen
it's
the food.
It's genetics.
I've seen the food. There's
yeah.
cheese on it. There's all kinds of, there's bread usually. He's eating pizza, a lot of pizza, a lot of sandwiches with bread.
I'm going to say it's working out every day.
That
well,
would help.
So because he is yeah. super fit.
Yeah.
And he eats some
yeah.
very
he
caloric
does. He does.
Food.
He does.
He's also
he does.
Young.
Caloric, Lisa.
Yeah.
Good word, caloric.
Yeah. He's so much fun, though. I love that he's here live.
You were so close, though.
I'm close.
Caloric, it's
caloric,
like the same
caloric,
thing.
Caloric.
But you know, this time of day, getting someone live in here isn't always easy.